Democrats are calling foul on the Trump administration for its actions in the lead up to Roger Stone's sentencing. Stone is a close friend and longtime associate of President Trump. He was found guilty last fall of lying to Congress and witness tampering. That was connected to his efforts in providing Trump's presidential campaign with Russian hacked emails. This week, federal prosecutors recommended he be sentenced to 7 to 9 years in prison, but their guidance was upended the next day by the Department of Justice. It said 7 years was too much and that something, quote, far less would be more appropriate. That prompted all four prosecutors to resign from the case. President Trump has denied directing the DOJ to change its recommendation, though he had tweeted about the sentence. At least one congressional Democrat, Eric Swalwell of California, told CNN that if Trump got involved, he could be impeached again.
You know, we're not going to take our options off the table. We don't wake up in the morning wanting to impeach him. You know, we want to work with him on prescription drugs, background checks, and infrastructure. But we're not going to let him just, you know, torch this democracy because he thinks that he's been let off once and we're not going to do something about it.
And in the news this afternoon, in an interview with ABC News, Attorney General William Barr said Trump never asked him to do anything in a criminal case, but that, quote, his tweets make it impossible for me to do my job, end quote. He said it's time for Trump to stop doing that. Barbara McQuaid is a law professor at the University of Michigan and former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. Barbara, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Let's look at this Department of Justice intervention itself here, changing the prosecutor's suggested sentence here. Is this something that happens very often?
No, it almost never happens. I'm not ever aware of it happening before. In a case like this, it would be routine, I would think, for the prosecutors to alert the U.S. attorney within their own office and for the U.S. attorney to make sure that the attorney general is briefed on what the position of the government will be. It's a high profile case. And the lesson was always the attorney general never wants to read about the position the department is taking in the newspaper. If it's a high profile case, you alert him in advance as to what's happening. And so to see the pleading get filed on Monday and then a very different pleading get filed on Tuesday, asking for a lower sentence, both under the name of the same U.S. attorney, is really unusual. And it says to me something happened in between. And the only thing that's really publicly known is that President Trump tweeted in between his great displeasure at the position taken on Monday. And that kind of involvement is deeply disturbing.
How much importance is there in this request, suggestion from prosecutors as to the sentence of someone who's been convicted? Ultimately, the judge still gets to decide, right?
Yes. So this is just a recommendation. The judge is the decision maker. But she usually wants to hear from both parties. Tell me what I should be thinking about as I fashion a sentence. Government, you tell me what are some of the facts of the case, any aggravating factors, what's your position? Defense, what else should I keep in mind here? What mitigating factors might I consider? And then come up with a decision. What's important to know about the position of the government, though, is that the position they took is the guideline sentence. That is, there is a set of U.S. sentencing guidelines that list out what a presumptive sentence ought to be in every case based on the offense and based on specific offense characteristics. You add that all up, look at a grid, and that's where they got the 7 to 9 years. That is a very typical starting point. And so to suggest that that is oppressive or unwarranted under the circumstances is just not true. In fact, there are aggravating factors here that could have merited arguing for a higher sentence. But certainly nothing I see that would support a lower sentence. And so the position that was the second position of the Department of Justice is really a very lenient one.
President Trump was asked earlier this week if he instructed the Department of Justice to change their recommendation. Here's some of what he had to say.
No, I didn't speak to the justice. I'd be able to do it if I wanted. I have the absolute right to do it. I stay out of things to a degree that people wouldn't believe, but I didn't speak to him. I thought the recommendation was ridiculous. I thought the whole prosecution was ridiculous. And I look at others that haven't been prosecuted, or I don't know where it is now. But when you see that, I thought it was an insult to our country.
Attorney General Barr also today said the president didn't directly tell him to change this this sentencing recommendation. If the president had done that, I mean, is there anything illegal with it? Question one, anything wrong with it, even if it's not illegal? Sorry about the two-part question.
Yeah, no, that's okay. It would be permissible, legally permissible, for the attorney general or even the president to suggest what a sentence ought to be. He is the head of the executive branch, and so it is within his legal right to do that. But I think since the Watergate scandal, we have seen presidents steer clear of what happens at the Department of Justice. We want to know that cases are brought based on facts and evidence and law and not on partisan politics. The idea that a president could be targeting his enemies or helping his friends is antithetical to our system of government. And so we've seen the Justice Department maintain independence, put norms into place to do that. For example, every attorney general has issued guidance about restrictions on communication between the Department of Justice and the White House to keep politics out of those kinds of decisions. And so to see a president intrude on that is really not only harming the independence of the Justice Department, but the perception of the independence of the Justice Department, which I think will make it in the long term ineffective. There are also ethical problems with a prosecutor making decisions based on personal opinions of the individuals under investigation. Ethics rules require prosecutors to make decisions based on facts and evidence and not based on any kind of personal opinion about the target.
Talking to Barbara McQuaid, law professor at the University of Michigan, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, looking at the Roger Stone case, the changes in recommendations of sentencing that came from the Department of Justice. And the president had tweeted his unhappiness with these guy with these recommendations from the prosecutors before then the Department of Justice moved in and lowered that request. The president said he didn't talk to the attorney general directly, but if the president is publicly tweeting his opinion on this, does that amount to a recommendation anyway?
Yeah, I think that this idea that the president didn't speak directly to the attorney general about it is doesn't deserve a whole lot of merit. The president makes his opinions known when he tweets about it and tweeting in with exclamation points that this is a miscarriage of justice. I think he can be sure that that's going to get back to the attorney general, that he's telling the whole world and it's going to get written about in newspapers. President Trump appears to use the kinds of tactics that we see a lot from corrupt public officials and organized crime bosses. And that is, I don't need to tell you directly what I want you to do. I make my wishes known and it is understood that you should do what you need to do to carry out those orders. And I think that President Trump operates in the same way. It gives him plausible deniability to be able to say, I never told him to do that, but he made it very clear what his wishes were. And so his minions scurried to get it done.
Well, I want to look at some of the latest news now. Now, President Trump had tweeted congratulations to Attorney General Bill Barr for taking charge of the case. And now Attorney General Barr talking to ABC, I'm going to quote somebody told him. He says, I'm not going to be bullied or influenced by anybody, whether it's Congress, newspaper, editorial board, or the president. I'm going to do what I think is right. He goes on, I cannot do my job here at the department with a constant background commentary that undercuts me. And he further said, it's time to stop the tweeting about Department of Justice criminal cases. And he said the president's criticisms make it impossible for me to do my job. So that was, I think, kind of surprising statements from the attorney general there today. What do you make of that?
It is. It's a good first step in that direction. I think what it suggests is that President Trump is not directing the orders. He is saying things that are distracting and make it appear that he is directing the orders. I'd rather see a more specific statement from the attorney general where he comes out and says, we do not take directive on our cases from the president of the United States. In this case, this decision was mine or whoever's it was. It's based on the facts and the law. This, I have found that it's really interesting to read statements from William Barr because you can learn as much from what he doesn't say as from what he does say. He doesn't say that we changed our mind after we saw President Trump's tweet on Twitter about this. He kind of dodges this case altogether and just says that President Trump's tweets make my job harder. I bet they do, because President Trump, after the fact, congratulated William Barr on reversing the sentencing recommendation. And so that was the part of it that made William Barr look very bad. And so I'm sure he would like President Trump to stop, but I'd like to know a little more from William Barr. I think we'll hear from him the next time he is scheduled to testify before Congress. But I think someone who is a leader and cared about the people who are working in the Department of Justice and making sure that the public sees the department as independent and free of political influence would make a stronger statement about the independence of the Department of Justice, not about his personal strength from being bullied.
Stepping away from the personalities involved here, do we have a structural problem? Sometimes the executive branch is going to need to be investigated, and the investigating body is controlled by the executive branch of the U.S. government. Do we need more structural ways to separate out that control over the Department of Justice?
I think what we really need is a Congress that takes its job of oversight and impeachment more seriously. We do have an executive branch to investigate crimes, but when it comes down to the president himself or even cabinet officials like an attorney general, the remedy for misconduct is impeachment. But we have seen now that President Trump is emboldened by the inability of Congress to execute its own powers of impeachment and oversight. And so I think what we're seeing is the lesson that he has learned is that he can act with impunity. I think that if we had a stronger Congress that was putting its loyalty to country or even its loyalty to its own branch ahead of its loyalty to the Republican Party, then we might see the kind of oversight that we need. So I think that's what's breaking down, and that's why it seems that there's no check on either William Barr or President Trump.
We're talking about the controversy surrounding the upcoming sentencing of Trump confidant Roger Stone. Barbara McQuaid is our guest, law professor at the University of Michigan and former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. You can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the Justice Department intervening, overriding their prosecutor's sentencing recommendation? Those prosecutors resigned from the case. What do you want lawmakers to ask Attorney General William Barr when he testifies as scheduled next month? Do you have questions about how all of this works? Should President Trump pardon Roger Stone? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the upcoming sentencing of Roger Stone. Federal prosecutors initially sought a 7 to 9 year prison sentence. Then the Justice Department came out, overruled that, said it was too harsh. That ultimately prompted all four prosecutors in the case to resign. Barbara McQuaid is with us, law professor at the University of Michigan. You can join at 800-642-1234 with your reactions and your questions. 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Barbara, that question I threw to listeners a few moments ago about the idea of pardoning Roger Stone, the president's gave a non-answer to that. He said he hadn't made a decision or was considering whether he was going to pardon Stone. But people have raised the question, if he was going to pardon Stone, why push for a lighter sentence? What are you watching for on the possible pardon here?
Yeah, I think what often happens with pardons is that those are decisions made especially in the controversial cases, in a president's second term, so that those decisions can't be used against him in a re-election campaign. So I would imagine he would like to see a lenient sentence for Roger Stone so that perhaps even a sentence of probation so he doesn't have to serve any time in prison. But if he does, I would expect sometime after the election, if President Trump is reelected, to see that if he is not reelected, I would expect to see a pardon sometime in that lame duck period before the new president is inaugurated.
Let's go to our callers now. Marvin is with us in Fish Creek. Marvin, hi.
Hi. Hey, you were talking before about the impartiality of our Justice Department and Bill Barr being part of that. And I think that ship has sailed. I think Bill Barr he played that card when he smoothed out the Mueller report for President Trump. And it seems to me that's too late. What Bill Barr did recently by reducing the sentencing on Roger Stone is just another, he's just showing his hand again. And that's where I am.
Marvin, thanks for the call. Marvin, referring to Attorney General Barr's summary of the Mueller report before the whole deal came out. What do you think, Barbara?
I can't disagree with what Marvin has to say there. When William Barr rolled out the Mueller report, you may recall the chronology. Robert Mueller submitted his report to William Barr as the Attorney General, along with an executive summary. And Robert Mueller intended for that summary to be the public's first impression of what it said. Instead, what William Barr did is he held on to it for about 3 weeks and issued his own statement about what it said. He said that Robert Mueller found no collusion. He also said that Robert Mueller was unable to find or decide whether there was obstruction of justice. And so William Barr himself decided that there was not. As a result of that, President Trump was able to say repeatedly and loudly, no collusion, no obstruction. Now, of course, that is not what Robert Mueller's report actually said. It did talk about coordination of messaging. It talked about welcoming help from Russia. And it talked about at least 10 instances of obstruction of justice. And so I think that William Barr was very savvy about how he did that, because by the time that report became public 3 weeks later, the public had made up its mind and moved on. And so I do tend to agree with him that it's hard to overlook that very political move and give William Barr the benefit of any doubt now when he's talking about how he's independent and won't be bullied.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to John now in Stevens Point. John, hello.
I think we only know the tip of the iceberg about everything that's going on. And I think that it would be nice if Trump would quit tweeting and pay more attention to business, because he does use the tweeting to use as his chronic advertising tool. I mean, obviously, he's learned from his previous careers how to do that. The same token, whatever the government says, I question everything that comes out of the federal government right now.
John, I just want to clarify, do you mean currently under the current administration or going back before the current administration as well?
Yeah, the Clintons come out of office bankrupt, and within 5 years, see, I have two children I have to answer to each day, and I tell them, how can they become worth $700 or $800 million in 5 years after? It wasn't from selling books, of course.
John, thanks for the call. So, John, and I think a lot of people skeptical about certain parts of federal law enforcement, even in the pre-Trump era. Barbara, what would you say to them?
Well, I think that it's always healthy to make sure that law enforcement is being scrutinized, are being transparent, and are being held accountable. Certainly, as far back as Watergate, and maybe even beyond that, we've had abuses by the FBI and CIA with unauthorized spying programs and those kinds of things. And that's why we demand oversight. We allow Congress to peek behind the curtain and see what's going on to make sure things are being done properly. It's why we have whistleblower protection laws to provide a proper channel for government employees to report fraud, waste, and abuse in a way that they can't be retaliated against. And so all of those things are really important to proper functioning of government. And so, it's the attacks on those things that I think can cause us problems, because we've got humans who are running all of these federal agencies and law enforcement. And from time to time, humans make mistakes or humans do the wrong thing. And so we need to make sure that we can take a look and oversee what they're doing and making sure that they are complying with the law.
Thanks for calling in. We're talking to Barbara McQuaid from the University of Michigan Law School, looking at the Roger Stone sentencing, the Department of Justice overruling initial sentencing recommendations from federal prosecutors who then resigned from the case. Back to your calls now. Joe is with us in Milwaukee. Joe, hi.
Hi there. My thoughts are, first of all, that Roger Stone absolutely deserves 7 to 9 years. He, is guilty of the things that he's charged with, and he was disrespectful to the judicial system, to the court. And I also think that Bill Barr proved last time that he was attorney general that he's willing to lie to protect the president. I think that is part of what he believes his job is. And he's out there investigating conspiracy theories at the whim of, this president. It's clear that he's willing to do anything the president asks, regardless of its legality. And I'll take the answer off the air.
Joe, thanks for the call. Barbara, your thoughts on William Barr's longer-term career?
Well, he's famously said that he's not worried about his legacy because he'll be dead. And so he's going to do whatever it is he wants to do. I can kind of take that in two different ways. One is, I'm not going to be really worried about people second-guessing my decisions. I'm going to do what I think is right. But there's also a more sinister message there, which is, I'm going to do whatever I want, and I'm not worried about long-term legacies or history. And I think there's something that can be damaging about that, this sort of nihilistic sense of the ends can justify the means, and I can get done what I want to get done. Of course, in our country, we value process so much as the outcome and as much as the ends. Some of the things William Barr has done in prior administrations, including recommending pardons for some of those involved in the Iran-Contra scandal, also suggest this idea of unitary executive, strong executive power, and I don't really care what other people think about me. I think there's value in making sure that you are not only reaching a desirable end, but that you're doing it by proper means.
In our last minute or so, I want to go back to the prosecutors who resigned from the case. What do you make of that decision?
I'm sure it was a very painful decision for them. Three resigned from the case and a fourth actually resigned from the Justice Department. These are amazing jobs that people work very hard to get. And I'm sure it was with great pain that he left. But I think they sent a very powerful message. And I know I'm hearing from my former colleagues around the country, you know, for, DOJ alums who are grateful for to them for the stand that they have taken, taking a strong stand to make sure that the public understands that this is not okay and bringing attention to this matter in hopes of changing it.
Barbara, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Barbara McQuaid is a professor at the University of Michigan Law School and a former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. She joins us today for a look at the Justice Department's intervention in sentencing recommendations for Roger Stone. Federal prosecutors had initially asked for 7 to 9 years in prison, but the Department of Justice overruled them to seek something, quote, far less. Stone is scheduled to be sentenced next Thursday. Attorney General Barr has talked about the case some today and the president's tweets. We'll keep watching that story, and you can follow it with NPR newscasts at every hour and half hour. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, online scams and bots are targeting U.S. military veterans and active duty service members as part of disinformation campaigns. We'll talk to a veteran who's devoted his career to tracking down and revealing those schemes. A lot of baby boomers are moving out of their homes and trying to get rid of excess stuff along the way. We'll talk to two experts about the best ways to downsize and the tough decisions that need to be made. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday. WPR's Lori Skelton is back with us. She's been trying out lots of different cheesecakes, traditional, sweet, savory, no bake, with bacon, completely vegan, and more. It's coming up tomorrow on Central Time.